study piano when I'm a little older. So she and Daddy are buying lots of United States savings bonds to make that wish come true. Isn't that swell?
This is Milton Cross inviting you to hear the new Treasury Salute, presented on more than 800 American radio stations and featuring Robert Waldrop, author and commentator, in a transcribed story from the American Notebook, Playing with Fire. And now, Robert Waldrop and our Treasury Salute story, Playing with Fire.
Fortunately, the north wind wasn't blowing the night our woodshed burned down, and it didn't usually blow either when time came for Mother to do her canning. The neighbors were on hand, though, that night, helping us to fight the fire. One of the best bucket brigades I ever saw. But even the neighbors stayed away when Mother was busy putting up her fruit for the year. That was no time to hang around our kitchen door. This is a story involving our neighbors, the north wind, the night our woodshed burned down, and Mother's canning season. You could always tell when she was getting ready to put up her fruit. She began to get irritable. There were just certain times when a trained eye could tell that it was better to keep out of her way. One of those times was when the north wind blew. Something about it, the dryness in the air and the generally parched atmosphere, seemed to get under my mother's skin and she'd get cross and out of sorts. She was the same way in canning season. The campaign would be launched when Mother would say from her place at the head of the supper table,
"Which one of you boys is going to pick me some peaches tomorrow? I need about 3 or 4 lug boxes."
And Dad, choking to himself over an ear of corn, would add,
"Those Clings and Crawfords out there are just about ready for canning. Won't take you long to get your mother all she needs."
Well, it was plain to see which side Dad was on. So in the morning, Mother would have some buckets ready on the back porch and send us out to the family orchard to begin our job. Breakfast was a hurried-up affair on those mornings, and we boys thought it was kind of skimpy. There wasn't much room on the stove for anything but the big pots and kettles that Mother had already lined up. This, we, of course, considered was our sister's fault, for her main job at such times was to cook the family meals. Mother had a one-track mind, and when she was canning, and that was that. So by noontime, the kitchen was the hottest, stickiest place in the world. I can smell that sickly sweet smell now of all those peaches and apples and pears and whatnot cooking. Mother's hair would get down in her eyes and her face would be flushed and her black eyes would snap the minute she saw you. July was not the kind of weather that I would have picked for canning, but July was when all our fruit was at its peak, of course, so it had to be then or not at all. Mother would have a big roast, big enough to last for 3 or 4 days until the worst was over, and my sister filled out the menus with fresh vegetables right out of our own garden. My grandfather raised the garden. That was his special province, and we were blessed all summer long with the finest peas and beans and turnips and carrots and beets and golden bantam corn and blackberries and artichokes. Oh, my mouth waters as I think back on how we used to eat in those days, canning or no canning. But all things pass away, and finally my mother, completely exhausted, would have the pantry and the back porch and every available inch of space in the kitchen stacked up with big mason jars full of fruit, vegetables, pickles, pickle-lily, all our winter menus on advance display. Then she would more or less collapse for a day or so, and we all heaved a sigh of relief. Now there was only one more thing to do, and that was for us boys to carry it outside to the storeroom and under her vigilant direction, store it away on the shelves. The peaches all together, the pears together, the apricots and cherries separate, each thing in its special and designated place. And that brings me to how the woodshed happened to burn down. Because the woodshed and the storeroom were under the same roof in a small building that stood in our backyard at no great distance from the house. In the long, cozy winter evenings when the family would be seated around the kitchen supper table, we ate our meals in the kitchen except when company came, Mother would announce, as she swept the table with her now laughing black eyes,
"There's no dessert, unless somebody wants to go out to the storeroom and bring in a jar of fruit."
Well, this, I knew, meant me, because my little brother was afraid of the dark. And Mother would look at Father and ask,
"Which would you rather have, dear? Some of those Bartlett pears, or some applesauce, or apricots, maybe?"
And Father would sigh. He always sighed a good deal. I never knew why. It was just one of his mannerisms when he was trying to make up his mind. And he'd reply,
"Apricots."
Just as simply and directly as that. Once he'd made up his mind, that was it. So I'd be sent out after the jar of apricots. Now, I wouldn't like to mention any names, but some little boy whose name I'd rather not confess had a very bad habit of playing with matches and of lighting his way to and from the woodshed in the storeroom with a succession of matches instead of using the flashlight, which was always on the back porch for such purposes. And on the night the woodshed and storeroom burned down, he must have dropped a match into a pile of old papers or something, for in some strange, never-accounted-for way, the woodshed caught on fire. We were all sound asleep in our beds in the middle of the night when the roar and the crackle of it wakened us with a start. My sister woke up first, and she soon had the whole household out of bed. Well, Dad took just one look and jumped to the telephone to ring up all the neighbors and get the local fire patrol into action. But just as Dad was ringing for all he was worth, something happened that made the ringing quite unnecessary. Well, for an instant, nobody could figure out just what it was that had exploded. Dad said there must have been a can of kerosene or something in there. But Mother knew.
Kerosene, nothing. Those are my fruit jars exploding.
And she was right. For a half an hour, one by one, and sometimes in whole volleys, those jars of peaches and apricots and pears would explode, popping and shattering the night air for miles around, waking up everybody within a radius of 3 miles with their report. And this was what brought the neighbors running. Now, Grandfather's chief worry was,
"Wonder if there's enough water in the windmill."
Well, Dad said to that,
"It was full this evening when I looked at the gauge."
Fighting a fire with the low pressure we had in the country was really a hopeless case. As a matter of fact, they didn't even try to save the woodshed. It and the storeroom were too far gone. Dad had just stacked it high, my brother and I helping, with fine, dry cordwood. And the whole thing was a seething, raging inferno.
"Oh, my peaches, my pickles, my raspberry jam!"
Poor Mother. After all her labors, that it should come to this. But it was all we could do to save the house. By the time the neighbors collected, the shingles of our roof were beginning to catch. It took a whole bucket brigade, passing the full buckets up a ladder and slopping the water all over the roof to keep it from igniting. But we did manage to save the house, and there was nothing to do now but watch the woodshed and the storeroom burn down, every now and then nearly jumping out of our skins when another mason jar would go off. Well, the thing burned until morning, and we were all afraid to go back to bed anyway until it was safely to the ground and no further harm could occur. So along toward daylight, when the danger of the house going was past and the neighbor men had the woodshed under control, Mother went into the kitchen and made breakfast for everybody. Well, there must have been 30 or 40 people she cooked for that morning, and not a jar of jelly in the house to offer them on their toast. It was a long time before it ever came to light just how that fire started. But I think Mother suspected all along. It took a day when the north wind was blowing and Mother was having one of her north wind spells for her to make her accusations before the family court. And when the guilty party broke down and confessed, he got the soundest thrashing, delayed action though it was, of his life. I can feel it yet. A fire in the country, away from the big fire engines and the water mains of town, is a serious thing. No laughing matter. But the thing that impressed me was how all those neighbors of ours came running to our rescue in the middle of the night, just as if it were their own woodshed on fire. Those were good neighbors. They had the real old-time community spirit. Our tragedy was their tragedy. Those women around the valley all brought some of their own canned fruit over to my mother, and after some of the men came over and helped my dad build a new woodshed, we got through the winter all right. The whole thing's a vivid memory to me, as undoubtedly each of you has memories of a fire like that or some other minor catastrophe. And so the night our woodshed burned down, the thoughts of my mother when canning season came around, and the north wind when it blows, all remind me of our old neighbors back there on the farm, component parts, all of them, of another chapter in our American notebook.
Friends, this is Milton Cross speaking. It was team play on the part of friendly neighbors that saved the farmhouse from destruction by fire. It was team play on the part of friendly neighbors that restocked the larder. And it's team play on the part of friendly neighbors that has made America the greatest country in the world. If America is to remain a leader among nations, working for peace and prosperity, the millions of individual citizens who make up the great American team must have individual financial security. Financial security is the most cherished desire of all men. And there's such a wonderful way to add to your financial security in the future. It's to take just as much money as you can today and invest it in United States savings bonds. Backed by your government, paying $4 in just 10 years for every $3 you invest, United States savings bonds are the safest, best investment in the world today. And they go a long way toward providing future financial security for you and your family. They spell dreams come true.
Our next Treasury salute story from the American Notebook will be a barbershop ballad. I'm sure you'll enjoy it, so join us, won't you? Until then, this is Robert Waldrop speaking. Thank you for listening.
This transcribed Treasury salute was written and narrated by Robert Waldrop and directed by William S. Rainey. The music was under the direction of Mark Warnow. This is Milton Cross reminding you that the best way in the world to back your future is to keep buying and holding United States savings bonds.